We are in the fifth dwelling place, third chapter, 5, 3, 8, 9, 1.
Could you refresh my memory on what these numbers mean?
Okay, the first number is the dwelling place.
Okay.
The second number is the chapter. Uh-huh. And the next numbers are the paragraphs, the number of paragraphs within the chapter.
And our book has it there.
So there would be paragraphs eight and nine. And then what's the one?
The dash is the first topic or the first question in that chapter. Okay.
It took me so long to understand that. I would go back to the first page where you explained it, and I think I got it in my mind now. It took me.
Well, I was trying to find a nice concise way to point you to where we were, you know. But it should be, if you follow along in the book, it should be chapter 5, paragraphs 8 and 9 in that book.
I just got it.
I don't know what the next one was. What's 9?
Everybody got it?
9-1. Just
8 and 9. Yeah, the next paragraph.
So when I got to these particular ones, 5, 6, and 7, sometimes I would take 2 or 3 paragraphs together and put stuff together, because sometimes she just says one or two things in one, and it continues to the next. So rather than do each one separately, I kind of combine them sometimes.
She does.
And I do it that way. So she's talking about the signs and stuff, about how we know we love God and all these kinds of things. But later on in 6, she's going to devote different chapters to different kinds of experiences she had. Like, one is locutions, one is visions, and stuff like this. But for right now, she's just kind of talking about the things that we do to observe how much we love God. And so she told us that we know we love God by how much we love our neighbor. If we don't love our neighbor very much, that means we really don't love God very much, because he loves them. So how can we say we love him if we don't love what he loves, you know? So Teresa says the most certain sign we are observing these two laws is whether we observe well the love of neighbor. We cannot know whether or not we love God, although there are strong indications for recognizing that we do love him. She says that because we always give ourselves credit for more than we really deserve. You know? We're very self-serving people. And so if somebody says to you, do you love God? You're going to say, oh, yeah, I love him a lot, you know. Well, how much do you know? How do you know you love him a lot? You know? So that's what she's getting at here. But we can know whether we love our neighbor, because that's how you treat your neighbor. You know, you treat him gently and kindly and all this kind of stuff. Even if you don't like him, you still treat him with love and be respectful and all these kinds of things. And be certain that the more advanced you see you are in love of neighbor, the more advanced you will be in the love of God. For the love His Majesty has for us is so great that to repay us for our love of neighbor, He will in 1,000 ways increase the love we have for Him. That's a really important statement that she makes right there. Because she says that he can actually control how much we love Him. And so if we love our neighbor enough, He will allow us to love Him more. Give us the help we need to love him more.
I think he helps us love our neighbor too.
I think so too.
Ordinarily. No, it's so true. And I used to think it was funny, because you think differently than you did when you were 18, spiritually. But I used to think it was gradual, that your love of God increases the older you are, to a degree, but it's more the love you have for your neighbor. I see that, yeah. Yes. It's not. Nothing's gradual or automatic.
Yeah. I need a real computer to put this in.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try them.
So I think that's a very important point there that she's making, that we love God. We know we love God by how much we love our neighbor, and then if we do love our neighbor the way we should, then He will help us to love Him even more. And He's going to help us love our neighbor, like you said, because He wants us to do that, right?
It's like a two-way street.
Yeah, it's a two-way street. Yeah, exactly. Everything with Him is a two-way street. Everything.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It brings more peace if you love your neighbor.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everything we do with God is a two-way street.
Yeah.
And that's why Teresa says that mental prayer is the frequent converse or dialogue with the one who loves you infinitely. Mm. So it's always a two-way street, you know, when you pray. In section 9, Teresa says, it's important for us to walk with careful attention. That's interesting, to walk with careful attention. It's important for us to walk with careful attention to how we are proceeding in this matter. For if we practice love of neighbor with great perfection, we will have done everything. We will not reach perfection in the love of neighbor if that love doesn't rise from love of God as its root. So we can't love our neighbor perfectly unless we love God. So you can see how this it's a circle. Mm-hmm. You know, it all hangs together. Mm-hmm. Everything is dependent on everything else, and it all kind of comes together.
Mm-hmm. So if someone helps their neighbor, but they don't love, like say an atheist helps their neighbor, but they don't love God, don't acknowledge Him, then what they're doing for their neighbor isn't considered perfect.
Isn't perfect, right?
Yeah. It's like I read, people do things on a natural level. It's their personality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But still, it's the supernatural that makes you do the impossible.
Right.
Because you got to think of all these people that head up different charities or, you know, concerts to give money for something, you know.
Yeah.
Are they doing that?
You know, they're doing it for themselves.
On a social level. For likes.
Because some people do things to bring glory on themselves. Mm-hmm. Say, look how wonderful I am. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm doing all these great things. Mm-hmm. And Jesus tells us in the Gospels that you've had your reward because you got the adoration of men.
And then that's it.
That's it. And that's all you're going to get, you know. Right. If that's your motive to be admired by other people, you got that, and that's your reward. Mm-hmm. That's all you get.
Yeah.
And so he wants us to love others because... Mm-hmm. But the love of God is the root of that love. Right. And then like a root, it begins to grow and spring more. Mm-hmm. And so the more you love your neighbor, the more he's going to help you love him more. And the more you love him more, the more you're going to love your neighbor. So it's kind of a growing cyclic process.
Sometimes you hear about celebrities that died and all the things they did that you never knew about.
Right.
And I think, you know, that's good. They're doing it for the love of God.
Right.
Yeah.
There's someone that did that.
Yeah, there are all kinds of stories about things that Donald Trump has done for people, you know, that you never hear about. Because he doesn't brag about it or anything. He was going somewhere down the highway one time and he got a flat tire. Uh-huh. And this guy pulled up behind his car. Uh-huh. And he said, let me help you change your tire, because he was dressed in his suit and everything.
Yeah.
So the guy changed his tire for him. And so he tried to pay him. And the guy said, no. He said, I don't want any payment. So Trump found out who he was and paid off his mortgage.
Really?
Wow.
What a story.
That's a good heart.
Yeah. I mean, he does things like that, you know?
Yeah.
And he doesn't talk about it. He doesn't brag about it.
He's a New York, like, brash person.
Yeah.
But you say, what did he do for the country? You know? You know? Yeah.
But well, that was good. I'm glad you told us that.
But a lot of the people that really work well with him have said that he's very, very generous to everybody that, you know.
And he's not prejudiced. I know.
No.
They keep saying that.
That's right. He's really not.
No.
So.
No.
Anyway, that's one example we see around us.
Yeah.
But there are so many, many people that love their neighbors and do it very quietly.
Yeah.
They don't look for glory or anything else in the process, you know.
Yeah.
So Teresa then warns about temptations from the devil to make big plans about loving our neighbor, only to have our deeds not be in conformity with those plans. She says the same about humility and all the virtues. To make us think we have one virtue when we don't, the devil would circle hell 1,000 times.
Nice.
He's always trying to fool you to think you're what you aren't and everything else. Feigned virtues never come without some vainglory. Vainglory is doing something that you think is really wonderful, but you're really doing it for yourself. Mm. Padre Pio says that is the one vice that has no opposing virtue.
Mm.
He said the only thing you can do when you see that somebody is suffering from this vice of vainglory is to pray for them.
Mm.
There's no almost every other vice, there's an opposing virtue you can work on to help you get rid of that vice. But vainglory is the one vice that has no opposing virtue.
Couldn't they do like helping with a homeless shelter? That would be like the opposite, don't you think? Vain glory is doing something for what? Yeah. For their
own it depends
glory.
On why they're doing it. You know, if they, if they again, it's the vanity part of it.
Yeah.
You're doing it to get praised. So I'm doing such wonderful things for the church. Praise me. You know, that doesn't
people
work.
Like that.
Yeah.
That doesn't work.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that fall into that trap. You know, they think they're doing great things and they're really hurting themselves.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean don't do good things for the church. It just watches your motivation.
Yeah.
You know?
Keep doing it, but change your mind.
Yeah. That's true. But that's a very important paragraph here.
Mm.
That she warns about these temptations because it's the devil's temptations that are making you do this.
Mm.
He tries to make you make big plans by loving your neighbor, only to have the deeds not be in conformity with those plans. You make big plans, then you don't do what you really plan. So you, you know, everything goes afoot. And then humility. And she says that it's the same is true about humility and all the virtues. So he's going to try to make you think you're virtuous, and then you find out that you're really not being very virtuous. So you got to watch out for those temptations.
Mm.
And so how do you avoid those temptations?
Being truthful to yourself.
Truth to yourself. Self-knowledge. Again, humility and self-knowledge. So what examples do we have from the lives of the saints that we can use as models of love of neighbor? What's a big one we all know about?
Teresa
of Avila. I mean, Teresa of Calcutta, yeah.
I thought Maximilian Kolbe.
Yeah.
Maximilian Kolbe.
St. Francis with the poor, going around. I thought the Blessed Mother.
The Blessed Mother,
She
immediately found out that Elizabeth was pregnant, she went right to her house, no question. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stay there
Saint
to help.
San Martin de Porras?
San Martin de Porras, Right.
Yeah.
Yep, San Martin de Porras.
There was some, I think it's St. Elizabeth. She was either a queen or something, and the husband died.
Elizabeth of Hungary,
And she devoted her life to helping the poor.
Yeah, she did a lot of that.
Yeah, a lot of them.
St. Clair.
Yeah.
You know, that worked with St. Francis. Same thing, you know.
Mm.
So there are a lot of saints we have examples of.
Mm.
You know, St. Gemma Galgani. How do you pronounce her name? Galgani?
I don't sound good enough.
I never can get those Italian names quite right. But she was a model, too. You know, she was pregnant and refused treatment to save the life of her child. You know, she is a wonderful person. I just got a book recently. It's the life of St. Gemma Galgani.
Oh,
the diary.
It's
her diary. And it's I want to read that. It was highly recommended.
Wow.
There's a book on that we read for the Legion on St. Louis de Montfort, and it's Wisdom's Fool. And he just put himself out there all the time. And they didn't like him. But his whole thing was to get the gospel to people and to get them on the right path.
Sure.
And, you know, he went beyond. I mean, we'd be like, no, I don't want to do that. They're making fun of me.
And she goes on later in the book to say that's what's going to happen to you. People won't like you.
Oh.
Because you're making
show. Really, he was making waves, and they just didn't like it.
Nobody likes
what
waves.
You see right now. Right now.
Nobody likes
on.
Waves. He was on the beach. They don't like waves.
They didn't like what he was saying because they didn't want to adjust their lives.
Right.
So paragraph 12, Teresa says that if we fail in love of neighbor, we are lost. Excuse me. If you do not, she says, if we fail in love of neighbor, we are lost.
Mm-hmm.
If you do not fail, I tell you that you shall receive from His Majesty the union that was mentioned.
Mm.
So she's tying everything to that love of neighbor. That's a really important thing. When you see yourselves lacking in this love, believe me, you have not reached union. And beg our Lord to give you this perfect love of neighbor. Let His Majesty have a free hand, for He will give you more than you know how to desire, because you are striving and making every effort to do what you can about this love. So she's really emphasizing how important love of neighbor is for our own growth in prayer, our own growth in holiness. And it also is also the key to entering into this prayer of union with God. Mm-hmm. So that's a very important thing.
You know, I found that prayer of recollection under prayer of union on internet for St. Teresa. Is that, are they the same?
No. Prayer of the prayer of recollection is the thing she used to get to the prayer of union. That was what she calls her shortcut to get there. Because otherwise you have to go through this discursive meditation, and she never could do that. Mm-hmm. And so she found this other way that got her into the prayer of union.
That new prayer came out. I went to the Carmelite meeting yesterday, and it's already been published.
Okay.
And
it is?
It's beautiful. It's nicer than the old one. Uh-huh. It's a little folder, three little pages you fold.
Yeah.
And I think they said it'll be ready in October.
Okay.
So I can order. Don't get me any. I'll get it from the group, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I'll keep checking. I don't know.
I'll get a pack for all of us. It comes 25 to a pack.
You can't give me a package because I don't know if they're going to order it. They might just get one for everybody. Yeah. But I need it for the newcomers. Yeah, give me a package.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll get enough for everybody. Copies.
Yeah.
Okay, as we look at these teachings of Teresa, it becomes clear that our progress is a joint effort of our soul and Jesus, our works inspired by Jesus. What signs will you look for to help you determine the level of perfection in your love of neighbor?
If you hear they have a problem, do I do something about it or do I ignore it?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. But other than solving other people's problems, what else can you do?
No, I meant a problem like they need food or something. I don't mean psychological problems.
Right, sure.
Are you generous with your time if your neighbor has a problem?
Yeah.
Can you help them? Say, I can do it for an hour or so.
A lot of times it's just listening.
Listen.
To your neighbor, you know? Because people have people have problems. And a lot of times they don't want to say anything. Because, you know, we've got this kind of social grace thing that's kind of understood.
Yeah.
That you walk out of somebody and say, hey, how you doing? You don't want to hear about these problems, right? All you want to do is say, have them say, yeah, I'm doing fine. How you doing? And you say, I'm doing fine too. Yet one of you is miserable, you know? So you try to encourage people, if you got the time and you're not rushing off somewhere, say, well, how you doing? How's that problem? If you know about a problem, say, how's that coming? You know, how's it going? And so you can kind of encourage people to show that you care about them.
I have a friend, God bless, I'm not touting my own horn because I don't give a hoot. She's a lifelong friend from Long Island. I met her at the rectory, and we were friends for 40 years. And she suffers greatly with the leg. She can't move it. She's in agony. She's all by herself. The family doesn't help her. She's abandoned. And I don't have to call her and say, how are you doing? I get a weekly call. And it's funny because, I mean, I truly love her. And but I couldn't hear her because she talks softly and sometimes there's static. Well, I said, check out, all I can come, I understand. Yes, keep going. I mean, we're an hour and a half, at least once a week. And I'm wiped out because she calls me late. I get the headache. So anyway, I usually bless myself 10 times when I'm listening to the phone call, you know, God give me. So anyway, I got the hearing aid. I can hear every word.
Now you can hear.
I'm so happy because it looked like
and
I was.
The hearing aids apparently have something that works with the phone, too. Do your ears have that?
Oh, no. Oh, I can, but I told her, forget it. I said, I'm not high tech.
I bet you
She tells me I can hook it up to my TV. I said, are you out of your mind? She gives me the box. And then she said, you can hook it up to your cell phone. I go, put it in my ear, on and off, and I can raise it with the two buttons.
Yeah.
She said you can raise it, and when you plug it in at night to charge it, in the morning it goes back to what I set it at, and then you can lower it. So I lower it one. Mm-hmm. She only put it at 50, and she said it can go 50 more. I go, I'm fine with this.
Oh, good.
Great.
Yeah.
She said because your hearing was so bad, it can't take all of a sudden to put on.
So did you have it on this morning in church?
Oh, I have it all the time. I have it on now.
And it didn't bother you to hear background noise?
No, I don't hear. The baby's crying.
Yeah, does that bother you?
The first time I put it in, there was a kid behind me, a lovely family, five little ones, 7 years and down, the baby. Baby screamed. I jumped.
Yeah.
So that is, you know.
Yeah, that helps. Sorry. Yeah,
that's loud.
So anything we can do sometimes just to encourage somebody to let us help them.
Yeah.
You know, just to be there. Just to be there. Sometimes that's all that's necessary. Just to listen.
To listen. You know? Yeah.
So that's an important thing.
Yeah.
Okay, chapter 4. We get into chapter 4 now. In this chapter, Teresa warns us about the care and wiles of the devil that he uses trying to get us to turn back, to give up prayer, and leave the castle. Mm. He's always trying to get us to give up this whole pursuit of prayer. Okay? Teresa says that it appears we are curious to see where our little moth will rest, since it rests neither in spiritual delights nor in earthly consolations. Says its flight is higher, and I cannot satisfy your desire until the last dwelling place. So we don't really know where we're going to want to land finally till we get to the end, because we land with God. Okay. She's encouraging us to keep the eyes of our soul fixed on the goal we are striving for, the prayer of full union we experience in the seventh dwelling place. We're getting close. So do not give up. Do not get complacent. Do not get distracted. In paragraph 2, she says she wants to explain more about what the prayer of union is. Again, referring to the imagery of the butterfly, she keeps using a moth and a butterfly interchangeably. It's just something that flies.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not bound to a branch crawling around. It can fly around.
Mm.
She says, although it is always bearing fruit by doing good for itself and for other souls, it never stops to rest because it fails to find its true repose.
Mm.
Here we are reminded of the saying of St. Augustine, my soul will not rest until it rests in you.
Mm.
How difficult is it for a person in the world to keep their focus on this ultimate goal of union with God without knowing exactly what the experience of the prayer of union will be like?
I think it's difficult because there's so many distractions in our world.
Yeah. And you don't really know what it's like, so you don't know what you're striving for.
Right.
All you know is that it's good, and I want to be there, but I don't know what I'm going to find when I get there.
Exactly.
It's like opening up a treasure chest, but you don't know whether you're going to find paper or jewels or anything else in it.
And I think, like, when you wake up in the morning, give God the intention of your day.
Yeah.
Say, you know, I want to, I always say I want to pray more, I want to live more in union with you. And you don't think of it all day long, but it's His grace that makes me do anything.
Sure.
You know, it's like an attitude. I think a lot in prayer life is an attitude. I mean,
it could be,
you know, what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that we have an advantage of that Teresa did not at the time is that we now have her counsel. She can tell us what it is we're going to be striving for. You know, that's one of the advantages of a book like this, because it tells you, you know, when you get there, this is what you're going to find. And so that gives you the incentive to keep going to find it.
Yeah. And there's six different people on the internet that will tell you what they think it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm thinking, too?
It's different for everybody, too.
It is.
Yeah. Like, if you concentrate so much, I'm just thinking, like, I want union with God, I want union with God, I want union with God. It's more, I think, important, like, not to keep thinking of, like, this goal, but just think of God.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And get rid of the goal, and you will accomplish the goal by doing God's will and loving Him. You know what I mean? Like, because that's like...
Well, God is the goal.
God is the goal. Yeah, but I don't like that word goal. Like, it's like... I don't know.
It's kind of like God practicing
the presence
of God.
Don't you like touchdowns?
Right. God will give you the goal if you do His will and love Him. You know, that's what I'm going to try to say. Like, I don't wake up in the morning and say, I want union with God. You know, you know what I mean? I'm saying we all try and love God.
I kind of just ask let me hear your voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It might be in others or direction or, I don't know.
Yeah. And God talks to you all kind of ways, you know.
Yeah.
He might talk to you in a dream. Like you did with St. Joseph, you never can tell.
I had a dream about purses last night, but I don't know. It was really strange. I had like three, and I was looking for them. I don't know. It must symbolize something else.
Yeah.
I'm trying to say, like, I don't want an obsession in my life. Do you know what I, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm trying to say. We can't get the idea this is an obsession.
You know, I remember days of not thinking about God whatsoever, you know, years ago. And now, you know, you try to do your prayers in the morning, and then, of course, we'll come to Mass and stuff. But sometimes, you know, you just go in the middle of the day, and you're like, where was I? Where did my mind go for 3 hours?
Right.
A few times. Why can't I stay on track?
I'll forget to, I'll come home, I'll go to Mass, and then run around and do a few things, get home at 12 o'clock, I'm dead with all the groceries and all this. I completely forget the morning Carmelite, the liturgy. I'm going, sorry. I'll do it like that. You know, and it's like, you know.
Sometimes it's, you know, you have a really busy day, and it's hard to squish the rosary in, and I'm not doing it like, I really like to do it up in my room at my desk, and it's quiet, and no one's around. I don't know, sometimes I'm doing it, and somebody keeps coming in the room, and I'm like, okay, this isn't really, like, focusing on it.
I find it easy because I live 25 miles from work, from church. And so when I'm driving in the morning, I do the rosary.
That's great.
So I'm good. What else am I going to do when I'm driving, right? In the back roads. So that's an easy way to
Do it. I have the scriptural rosary in the car. And I love the scriptures they use. And it's for every bead.
Really
a meditation.
Oh, that would be kind of long, too.
That's nice.
It is, but you just do part when, you know.
So there are a lot of things like that we can do to just kind of keep our attention on God and keep striving to. But the main, the big thing is to always try to do His will.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the really the big thing. She mentioned that earlier, and you don't want to ever forget that, because you're not going to do His will without His help. And so one of the things you pray for is, help me to always live to this day in accordance with your your holy will. Every time I go to communion in the morning, I've always asked, as with a prayer after communion, please help me to live in accordance with your holy will today. You know, because we can't do it without His help. You know, it's, we're not strong enough. Okay. 5431. In section 3, Teresa says, the best way to explain this espousal God desires to have with the soul is to use the comparison of the sacrament of marriage. She says this spiritual espousal is different from the kind of marriage, different from different in kind from marriage, since it is entirely spiritual. The spiritual joys which the Lord gives are very distant when compared to the delights married people experience, which is always kind of immediate. She says the espousal the Lord gives is a matter of love united with love, and the actions of love most pure and so extremely delicate and gentle that there is no way of explaining them, but the Lord knows how to make them very clearly felt.
So you can't know it unless he gives it to you.
But you'll know He's giving it to you,
right?
Because you'll experience that, and you'll have the, sometimes it'll just last a couple of seconds. Other times it'll last a little longer, but you'll feel that He's touching your soul. That He's, you know, giving you something. And it's a kind of a, you know, it's a very definite thing. But it oftentimes doesn't last very long. She mentions that in here, that it just lasts a couple of seconds sometimes.
But you can't forget it, so you know it's
real. You've had it. So here Teresa is injecting a touch of mystery in describing the prayer of union. Do you think she did this to help keep us focused on the goal, or for some other reason? I think it's because there is no way to explain it in words.
That's right.
You know? Right. Especially when it's going to be different for everybody.
Right. And it's hard. You can't explain spiritual things sometimes.
Yeah. It's very difficult.
You know what's going on in your soul. Explain.
I mean, they had that thing about that one saint that said, I can't remember. He saw God or something, and then he wrote it in the middle of the night on a piece of paper, and then when he died, they found it in his pocket. I can't remember. And you can read about it. It's just a short couple, like,
I don't
on fire, I'm on fire. And you read it, and you're still like, Okay, I don't get it, though.
Yeah.
You have to experience it. Yeah.
What person are you talking about?
I don't remember. Oh, we were talking about it. Oh, I can't remember where I heard it. It's a saint, and he had an experience of seeing God, and it was short, but he wrote it down on a little piece of paper, and then he wore it the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when he died, they found it inside, like, a hidden pocket.
Yeah.
And it was something like, I'm on fire, oh, glory. It's like short little, you know. Like,
But when he reads that, the memory will come back to him.
Yeah. So it was like him always, he didn't want to forget it. That's what he said, that he didn't want to ever forget that encounter.
When you hear people give testimonies, like drug addicts that couldn't get over it, and then they say, God, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And they are totally empty. They will have that experience.
Wow.
Yeah.
Or that seminarian we had a couple years ago with the porno.
Okay.
He had that same experience. And a lot of them describe it the same way, with the warmth. And
yeah.
It was something like, I'm on fire, oh, the glory. Yeah. And like one more line. That was
feelings frequently, the warmth, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must be part of
That warmth thing is really a big, especially with healings. There was a lady that went to Magigoria, and she was totally healed. Her legs were like shriveled up to nothing, and everything. Wow. And she fell back on the bed, and she felt this heat come across her whole body. She looked down, and her legs were big again and normal. And she was totally healed.
Wow.
And it just happened, like, in a flash.
Wow. Gives you the chills.
Yeah, it does.
So it just shows how much God loves us, If we go into Him, you think of a father who loves the child immensely, right?
Yeah.
The child comes up and says, please help me. What's the father going to do? Slap the kid in the face? No. He's going to help the child.
Right.
And that's how God is with us. But our love for Him, our going to Him, has to be sincere. We can't go to Him with selfish motives. We can't go to Him, with other than just love for Him.
With doubt.
Yeah.
With doubt that He can do it. My dear friend that I talk to every week.
Yeah.
She always says, well, I don't know if He'll do it. I said, Virginia, don't say that.
But you can do that sinner's prayer or doubter's prayer. Yeah.
She's so humble, though. And she always says, I'm not worthy, I'm not worthy. I go, nobody loves you. None of us are worthy. She thinks some people are worthy. Nobody is.
Well, God created her.
Yeah.
She's a child of God. She should not feel that way.
Yeah, she does. And she can't get over that.
Well, I think that's the biggest problem. A lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it could be too, because the family gave up on her. Like, they don't bother with her.
Which makes a big difference.
So she feels that because she's been abandoned. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So Teresa says that it seems to me that the prayer of union does prayer of union does not yet reach the stage of spiritual betrothal. So the prayer of union is kind of an intermediary step to get there. She then gives a short explanation of the stages of ordinary courtship leading to marriage. Now she's talking about what the stages of courtship were back in Spain in her time. Okay, not what it's like today,
There are stages today.
Yeah. She then says, so too, in the case of the union with God, the agreement has been made, and this soul is well informed about the goodness of her spouse and determined to do His will in everything and in as many ways as she sees might make Him happy. So that's an interesting thing there, too. All the different ways that you can think would make God happy. And then you go do those. That's an interesting way of putting it. And His Majesty, seeing how disposed to love of Him she is happy. As a result, He grants her this mercy, for he desired her to know Him more, and that they might meet together, as they say, and be united. We can say that union is like this, for it passes in a very short time. The soul sees secretly who the spouse is that she is going to accept. What she understands here is not limited by her normal means of learning in the physical world, since she couldn't in any way or in 1,000 years understand what she understands here in the shortest time. The soul is left so much in love that it does, for its part, all it can to avoid disturbing this divine betrothal.
So, I was a little confused. Is this the intermediate union with God?
Yes. Yeah, because we haven't even got to chapter 6 yet.
I know, what's 7 going to be?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the danger here is that you might be so enamored with what God's doing here that you don't want to leave this part. Mm-hmm. You want to stay here.
Right.
And we know what the danger is there. You can't stay here. Mm-hmm. You can't march in place in prayer. Mm-hmm. You've got to keep going forward until you get to the 7th dwelling place. And so, but she's giving you a hint of what it is you're working toward, that complete union with God. And one of the saints said, when you get to that 7th dwelling place, I think it was St. Teresa, when you get to the 7th dwelling place, nobody can be there except you and God. Mm. He treats you as if you're the only soul in creation.
Wow. But this is definitely a union of the 5th
castle. Right, exactly. Okay. Yeah. And so don't forget, this is like the courtship stage going into the betrothal. Okay. The betrothal is in the 6th, and then the marriage is in the 7th. Okay. So this is really good. When you get heaven, you feel like you're home free, right? You feel like you're really getting there. So, so the soul is left much in love that it does for its part all it can to avoid disturbing the divine betrothal. But if it is careless about placing its affection in something other than him, it loses everything. And the loss cannot be exaggerated. How does the soul reconcile love of spouse and family with this? Does this mean that if the soul loves its spouse or children, they lose everything?
Does this mean if the soul loves his spouse?
Because she makes the statement, now don't forget, she's a cloistered nun.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And she says, the soul is left so much in love that it is, for its part, all it can to avoid disturbing the divine betrothal. But if it is careless about placing its affection in something other than him, it loses everything.
I don't think it would take away from the spousal or children.
No, because God gave you your spouse, right?
Mm-hmm. Love is love.
And he wants you to honor them.
Right. And he wants you to honor them.
It would help you love them better.
Right. And that's also love of neighbor to a degree. You love God, but you're extending that love to your family.
Because one of your, love of neighbor plays a part in here, too. Because if you're at this stage and you're growing in love for God at this level, you want your spouse to join you in that. You want them to experience the same thing you're experiencing, that both of you can go on this journey together. And so that's kind of where you're there. So as you're growing in love of God, you're also praying for God to give your spouse the grace to come right along with you. They may not be there at the same time, they may come later, but you want them to have the same experience. And we're all on a different time scale on this thing,
you know? Have to get there. Yeah.
We're all heading there, all on a different time schedule, different paths, different time schedules, and everything else. But that's why we can all help each other. That's why Teresa's helping all of us, with her writings. So here's what you got to do. Here's what you got to think about. So you don't stop loving your children or your spouse because you love God, because then that would not be what He wants you to do. He wants you to love your children,
It helps you to love them more.
Yeah. So loving him is part of that, because he loves them too, right? So Teresa is concerned that souls who have arrived at this level of prayer might get lax and let their guard down. That's the big danger here, because you like so much what's happening there, okay? She opens this section with, I ask Christian souls whom the Lord has brought to these boundaries that for his sake they not grow careless but withdraw from occasions. Occasions meaning the things that draw you away from this Even in this state, the soul is not so strong that it can place itself in the occasions as it will be after the betrothal is made, the sixth dwelling place.
What does it mean by occasion?
What?
What does it mean by occasions?
Occasions of the devil trying to draw you away from this.
Okay, that's a
occasions of sin, good. Occasions of saying, I don't want to do prayer anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, things that are taking you away from where you are and making you go back to where you were.
Mm-hmm. Or getting careless sometimes, you know.
Getting careless,
being faithful to carelessness, sloppiness.
Yeah, let your guard down.
Right.
And I think I do that. You go and wait. You're doing fine, and all of a sudden you're like, well, I can't do that prayer today. Or, oh, I missed that meeting, that spiritual thing. And then before you know it, you're like, let's get back.
Right.
Okay. This present communication amounts to no more than a meeting. And the devil will go about very carefully in order to fight against and prevent this betrothal.
Mm.
So don't forget, you're at the meeting stage here. You remember the three stages? The meeting, the betrothal, and the marriage?
Yeah.
Well, we're still in the meeting stage here.
Meeting.
And she says that right now, the soul is not so strong that it can place itself in the occasions as it will be after the betrothal is made in the sixth dwelling place.
But if God loves you so much, why is he allowing Satan to be
because free
so
will.
Strong?
Yeah. He wants your will to be so in tune with his will.
But if Satan is so strong that you can't resist it.
We can resist it.
With his grace.
Yeah, you can. That's the whole point.
Ask.
You can't. You're in a good place here. And the only way you're going to not stay here is if Satan gives you a temptation that you think is more important to you.
It's real deliberate. You would be real deliberate.
It's not an undeliberate thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very deliberate thing, right?
Okay.
So you make a choice to turn back.
It's hard to believe you would do that, but...
But I think things are gradual.
Yeah, he starts with a little...
Well, he's very sneaky.
Yeah, he's very sneaky. Yeah.
Like yesterday, I'm like, I think I did too much on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, but you justify it because you're like, well, you got to get prepared for the week. And is this okay to be doing this or doing that?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much is too much to do on a Sunday, you know.
Yeah.
And I have the temptation, like, if I'm out all morning doing something, you go to Mass and come back. I say, oh, I should do the liturgy. But I'm so hungry. It's 11:45. And then the rational comes, well, I can't pray if I'm hungry.
That's right.
And then you delay it. I go, no, I got to just put my foot down and say, I'm going to pray hungry.
You can do it with that.
Then you pray while you're eating.
You're good, though.
Go get some food and then pray while you're eating, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go and eat right.
Sure.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that.
Aren't you glad you came?
So it says, note that Teresa talks about this state of prayer as a boundary and says that in this state, the devil will be very careful and subtle in trying to seduce the soul into occasions of sin, which he believes the soul will not resist. And by occasions of sin at this level, it's just as much occasions to walk backwards.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, punching somebody in the face or something. It's not that kind of sin. She's talking about giving up on prayer and turning back or being complacent. See, I want to just stay here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How would you recognize such an attack of the devil and what are effective ways to resist the attack?
Well, you know what I'm thinking? If he gives you an occasion of sin, but it's a sin you maybe never committed or something like that, you can't. Oh, what's this? You know, it's not the ordinary.
Or maybe you could just see yourself slipping back.
Yeah, you could see
yourself.
I think
it could be something as simple as you start getting too busy.
Yeah.
And you're not finding the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But don't forget the devil. The devil also has been around your whole life, right?
Yeah.
No, he knows you better than you know yourself.
Yeah.
And so one thing he'll do is say, well, look at this bad thing you did back 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You're such a horrible person. You did this. How can you possibly think that God's going to want to continue with this prayer thing? Why don't you just give up, you know?
Yeah.
Now, he may not be so blatant when he says stuff like that, but the thought is there.
Yeah.
And he might be kind of just trying to pull you away from this because he doesn't want you to go to the next stage of betrothal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the last thing he wants
sometimes
to have happen.
Sometimes that happens when people are talking about general confessions.
Yeah.
They get scrupulous all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when the priest, we all know God forgives, but he forgets. You know, I mean, that's a thought to hang on to.
Yeah, but then you get things like, you're like, did I ever confess that thing I did when I was 19?
Yeah, you don't get into that.
Didn't do that.
Because you'll never get out of that.
Yeah. I mean, come on, how many years did we live?
But what does the priest say? If you view this and all the sins of your past life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
What is that from? What did you just say?
In the precept.
That's what the priest says when he gives you absolution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of them
I have said it too, Father. I forgot it. Holy Trinity was. I'm like, you know, I'm having all these things where I'm thinking of things I did in my 20s. Mm. I'm like, you know, that was a long time ago. And he just said, well, you know, maybe there's more that you have to, you know, forgive yourself of, or, you know, he said just pray about it and not worry about it or whatever.
Yeah. Well, if you've told the priest, it should be, you know, it's gone then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true too.
It's gone, but still, I laugh. I said, the older you get, the more you think about it's getting kind of close, Lord. I mean, I don't know if it's next year, the year after, or it could be tomorrow. It's like, you do think a little differently.
Yeah.
And then the past comes up. You know,
it's different.
Yeah, that's Satan. You do your best. I mean, you know, it's not always the best.
Yeah, well, you're not. My mother's already got her plot. And who's reading at her funeral, and she will say, talk to me about it. We already picked our music out. I'm like, T-Mom.
She's ready.
I'm like,
how old is she?
88.
Oh, wow. There was a late black lady on TV. I don't know, was it yesterday or this morning? 114. The
Isn't
oldest.
That awful?
She looked
on that.
Beautiful.
Yeah, she did.
Oh, she looked. She was speaking, and it wasn't an old film. They were at her house. She was alert. She could have passed for 80.
What 90. Country?
Oh, here, United States.
Yeah.
Oh, it was mind boggling. And the daughter gets on. She goes, "Oh, I'm 91. I'm going home." That blew me away. I said, "Boy, you look better than me."
Oh, well.
I mean, mind-boggling.
Well,
alert.
It was kind of rare.
Yeah, that was wild.
So Teresa raises two questions. It says, how can the soul be deceived since it only wants to do God's will? And what are the ways the devil can attack the soul? She indicates her sisters might not experience this given how they live, but says those in the world are more susceptible. She gives the example of that even Judas was always in the company of Jesus and betrayed him. Mm. What are the biggest threats from the devil those of us in the world might face if we have progressed to this state of prayer?
I think sometimes you think you're doing something right. And, I mean, if you look at, like, abortion, I'm like, some people might think, well, we're doing something to help this person's life to be better.
Right.
And really, it's not. You know, we can see that.
Right.
But they think, you know, maybe the, you know, it was a traumatic thing that happened that resulting in, and they're having anguish, and so let's do an abortion, and you'll go back to the way you were.
Yeah.
But then,
that's
not what happened.
Yeah.
That's
right. Starts from the devil. Well, he could make you feel proud.
I think just all the things we were just talking about.
Yeah, right. Well, it's tricks.
Yeah. I think pride is a big thing.
Yeah, that is.
I've reached a state now. I'm good.
Because that's the root of all of all sin. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can never get away from that.
That's right.
Yeah.
So pride is a big thing. So watch out for any kind of sign of pride as the motivation for what you do. And then love your neighbor.
What if you trust yourself more than God?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You have more self-trust, you know?
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
You see, I'm going to rely on myself and not rely on God.
Wow, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's easy. You're not praying before a decision or, I don't know, opening the door to God to guide you on it and just say, oh, let's just do this.
The Lord helps those that help themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you can fall on a lot of quotes.
Yeah.
That's go along with for men.
But you brought up a big point there, though, because if we don't ask God for help in the different things we do, we are saying, I'm going to rely on myself.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're doing. And so every time you go into any kind of important decision. I don't mean driving down a road should have changed lanes or something, you know. I mean, when you have an important thing to do, you always pray before you do it, you know. Mm-hmm. If it's something that affects the whole family, you pray with your spouse about it. Mm-hmm. So what should we do, you know? You don't just try to do it on your own. Yeah.
Some people pray more than others.
Well, I ask for a lot of help because I'm alone. The last experience, I tell you, it's funny. I had to duplicate a lot for the Carmelites on Sundays. We don't have the teaching class anymore. I'm off the hook. But I got to make folders and greet the new people. Came from the monastery. So anyway, I'm halfway through duplicating, and I need more paper. And I can't open the paper drawer on the printer.
That printer just does not like you.
I panicked. And I thought maybe I could
kick it.
I took the
back. That's the old solution. You just kick it, right?
I said, Holy, I was practically crying. I said, Holy Spirit, it was like 20 minutes. I said, I can't open the drawer. And I couldn't open the side. I took the back off. That didn't help the drawer. I'm panicked. I thought, please, please, please. I said, I don't want to call the German guy, Doc, some of the guy.
No,
I said, oh, my God, he won't come today. I said, not blasphemous. I go like this. My hands have no power. Holy Spirit, if you don't help me, I'm really in trouble.
Came right out.
Came right out, huh?
Just didn't jiggle it enough the right way.
You gotta jiggle the right way. You gotta learn how to jiggle. Yeah.
It's stuck. I think I'm gonna have to. It's stuck. You can tell the drawer doesn't come out easily, but now I know.
Yeah.
But I said, you did it again. Then I call my friend and tell her, she goes crazy.
Oh, boy.
Gotta learn how to jiggle.
I think sometimes you can worry about things. I mean, in my own life, you worry about things, and that is like the devil taking over because you're not trusting. I mean, my husband pointed something out about our cat, and now I'm looking at the cat thinking, is it getting sick? I mean, our cat's already on medication.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, I think the cat's hair is kind of showing through in spots. And I'm going, what? Now that's all I can see. I'm like looking at
it. We should get your husband in here.
We could do a job on him.
Maybe one day. But I'm like, I think he regretted telling me. Yeah, I'm sure he regretted telling me because now we're like talking about it every day. I go, do you think the cat's okay? I'm like, I'm going to give it up and just move on.
It's like a therapy session in here.
So Teresa had these questions.
Oh, we should, looking at that cat.
So Teresa had these questions she gave us, and now she's given us the answers. So here Teresa answers the two questions. If the soul is always attached to God's will, it would not go astray. But the devil will tempt the soul under color of good, so the soul does not suspect. The devil uses little things to confuse the soul into thinking they are good. His objective is little by little to reduce the soul's ardor for God and make self-love grow, leading the soul to his will instead of God's will.
Well, he's got a game plan, boy.
Yeah.
Like, so he does. He's got a game plan.
Yeah.
But you see what he's doing here, you know, is very subtle.
Yeah.
Very subtle. Tempts the soul under color of good.
Mm.
He's never going to tempt you to do something that he's not going to say is good.
Yeah.
Because if you
are
see
so
it,
obvious that we know aren't good.
That's
so
right.
If you think something else, like helping a family member or doing something that you're like, oh, but we could do this.
Yeah, he always points it as a good. Think about it. Every time somebody does anything, they always have a good in it.
Yeah.
If I'm going to rob a bank, the good is I'm going to get all his money.
Yeah, it's presented to you. Yeah, even they say prostitutes.
Right.
They're doing a service.
I don't know what it is.
I'm getting a lot of money.
They're making somebody happy. That's what they said. They're making somebody happy.
Yeah.
Love of neighbor.
So those are the things that you have to really watch out for. Because he's always going to present it as a good. And so you're going to be tempted to accept it because it sounds good. Okay?
Yeah.
Uses little things to confuse the soul into thinking they're good. His objective is to little by little reduce the soul's ardor for God and make self-love grow, leading the soul to his will instead of God's will. Mm-hmm. So that's the real thing you got to watch for.
Yeah.
There's no place the devil cannot go.
Mm.
Teresa says...
The one... When you're in level 7, right?
Yeah, you can't go there,
okay.
Right?
Okay, no 7.
Gotta get there.
Teresa says that God permits this to observe the action of the soul that he wishes to be a light to others. She says that if there is to be a downfall, it is better to happen in the beginning rather than later when it would be more harmful to others.
Mm-hmm. Why would it be more harmful to others?
Because God is trying to set you up. See, God wants everybody to come. And not everybody's on his path. Mm-hmm. But if people see you on this path, they might be more attracted to say, hey, look, I want to go there too.
Mm. Like your kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, when he sets you as a light to others, he talks about that in the gospel, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he said you'll be a light to others.
Yeah.
And so that's what he wants us to be. He wants his light to shine through us to other people. Mm-hmm. He wants us to be like little beacons, little lighthouses, shining his light to others to attract them. That's what a lighthouse does, right? Mm-hmm. It shows where land is.
Yeah.
It also shows where some dangers are.
Lighthouse.
Shows you where to go.
That's nice, like a lighthouse.
Yeah.
And so he wants us to be little lighthouses and help people. And so if you're going to be that lighthouse, he wants to make sure you're really a good lighthouse.
Mm.
And you're not sending somebody off into the rocks instead of to the beach.
And the thing is, you might be the only one, which is tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you're going to fall, it's better to fall here rather than when you're in the sixth and seventh dwelling places.
Was it Bush who said beacon of light? Or remember that there was
Ronald Reagan.
Reagan.
Yeah,
beacon of light.
Or
and the other was sitting on a hill or something.
That was Ronald Reagan. Same thing.
Yeah.
But when they say it's better earlier than later, I think of like maybe like a priest that's done all this religious formation, and then all of a sudden has a big scandal, leaves the faith or something.
Right.
You know?
Can you think of any examples of those who have been seemingly close to God and who had a downfall and what that cause might have been?
Well, in the church, what's happening, in the time of St. John Fisher and Thomas More, they were the only ones who stood up for the church.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So all those other guys were collapsing.
Yeah.
Wow. That's just
and today is the same thing.
Sure.
To read your...
Yeah.
That's right. So we see that. We also see it in a lot of these televangelists that end up with scandals. Mm-hmm. You know, they get divorced or they go to jail.
Remember, the Bakers?
Oh, yeah. They were the prime one.
Yeah.
He's still on.
Yeah, he's still on.
Yeah. Oh, she died.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he divorced her.
Right. Yeah, well, Joel Osteen, too. He got divorced.
I read that he didn't. I looked it up.
He's back again. Osteen.
I know, because I'm reading Cardinal Pell's journal, and he reports on all the televangelists.
He does?
He has a TV, and he's in solitary confinement. He likes, he critiques them.
It's in his book?
Yeah, it's a fun book. Because it's just kind of like a conversation with him if you like him.
What did he say about Joel?
He likes some of the things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to stop here and pick up next time with paragraph 9.
Okay.
Any final thoughts before we leave for the day? Yes.
Non-judgmental to someone.
We don't have, at least we don't. I don't have any more
papers.
Me neither.
Past chapter 4. So, for the starting with the 6 dwelling places. In the book, I don't have any more notes from you.
No, you don't. I haven't sent out 6 yet.
Right.
I'm almost finished doing that. I'll probably have that out this week.
It's a pressure on you.
Yeah. No, that's okay. I'll probably have that out this week. It's it's 11 chapters, so it's taken a while to put 6 together.
Right.
And she covers a lot of stuff in there. But I'll try to get that out soon. But you are not wrong. You don't have them because I didn't send them out.
Maybe I'll have
them
back.
And list them in transition.
That's right.
I mean, she's like,
there's Janet just on my phone. As we were talking here, got a honor guard thing to send out for Mark Martini Jr.
I have a sister, Susan.
More than likely, I'll probably be the honor guard.
To stay in there. He's been a long time. Verbal abuse.
All right.
There seems like there's going to be a funeral mass next Monday for him.
Two marriages.
So I don't know if they would be having a luncheon, but the mass isn't until
every hour.
11:45.
So it might be
But we'll be all done by then.
Marriages, because they're at that stage where they've been for a while.
Susan won't get
And if we have to, we can down to the social hall instead of being up here.
It's like a miracle.
Okay.
And he said,
any final thoughts?
Believe.
Okay, you guys have a great week.
The more people you have praying.
Stay on the path.
And he's very abusive.
Work towards the betrothal.
The girl who just moved back. And she's a good child.
Have a blessed
but
week.
You too.
What she wants
have a blessed
to
week, guys.
Graduation. So Susan said, come back.
Love your neighbor.
She saved a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And she's working at a part-time, but that's not her career. Mm-hmm. And he is verbally abusing her. You should never have come back. You're nothing. You're no good. And then the other children see it.
Yes.
It's not. And Susan just says, I only get my joy from the God at Mass
That's
and from the months where she volunteers at
the hospital. But if we just say,